welcome to the Yes Indeed podcast, created by Mark Shepherd and run by me, Thomas Manuel. This will be our final episode for 2023, which was the year that I took over the podcast and started podcasting for the first time, really. It's been a learning process, let's say. Let's put it like that. But I'm very excited to bring you this episode, which is a roundup of all my guest answers to the question, what is a game that you've had a lot of fun with that you want to recommend to my listeners, right? And almost everyone who was a guest answered this question. And I've, you know, cut those out and put them together. I also asked three other standard questions to everybody else. They are not going to be released on the public feed yet, maybe next year, but they will be available on the Patreon. Part of my goal for 2024, going into 2024, is to increase the number of patrons on the Patreon. I've been doing a lot of stuff this year, the podcast, the newsletter, the teaching game series, designing my own games, all of that stuff. And I have more plans for the next year. Is that a good idea? I don't know, but I would love for all of this to become just a little bit more sustainable for me. So if you want to listen to the three other roundup episodes for 2023, please head to the Patreon feed. I would really appreciate your support there. But for now, enjoy this episode. It's really cool. It's a whole bunch of people talking about games that brought them joy, games that filled them with enthusiasm, infectious enthusiasm that I want to pass on to you. You know, it is well-placed excitement and energy and really kind of captures the joy of the hobby and why I'm excited to keep doing what I've been doing. First up is my first guest for 2023, Judd Cullman. Judd is the person behind Githyanki Diaspora, the blog, and Daydreaming About Dragons. One of my favorite RPG podcasts, maybe my favorite. I've often described Daydreaming About Dragons as my favorite source of advice for RPGs on the internet. Judd just has a wonderful way of communicating his ideas that are open-minded, friendly, approachable, not locking in people into a certain kind of worldview or play style or anything like that. He's a very generous voice on the internet, and I hope he keeps doing what he's doing. And I'm really grateful that the podcast was an excuse for us to sit down and talk about games together.
I have three different games with kind of different vibes, and I'm going to, the first two really don't need any help from me. And everyone who's re-listening to this is going to roll their eyes and be like, yeah, Judd, we know about that. We're, you do better. So the third one is, I think, a little obscure, and hopefully we'll get some more eyes on it. I want everyone to love this thing as much as I do. So as you said, Into the Odd has been on the table a bunch. I'm hacking it and enjoying it and want to make something else out of it, and hopefully I'll be able to come back and talk about this thing I've made in the next year. I hope 2023 we'll get something together. The other thing I've gotten to play a bunch recently with Jason Cordoba is The Between and Ghosts of El Paso. To anyone who is listening to the Yes Indeed podcast, you probably know about these games already. The Between is a really cool Victorian monster hunting game, and The Ghosts of El Paso is a really cool pre-statehood Texas, you know, right on the border of Mexico before there was such a thing as, you know, when it was just all Mexico, and really great playbooks. Maybe my favorite playbooks. I mean, I think the high mark for me for playbooks is like Apocalypse World and Wander Home. And The Between and Ghosts of El Paso are right up there. They're just amazing. And look at the unseen and look at the way that game is building the vibe at the table is really incredible. And then the weird game that I haven't played yet, and I just want everyone to look at and get excited with me, is called As the Sun Forever Sets. It is a Forged in the Dark game about surviving the 15 days where the Martians, the H.G. Wells Martians, attack Earth. And you're just like trying to survive as, you know, this kind of apocalyptic event happens. And you know how it ends because we know that the Martians get a cold and then they die. But I'm just fascinated with the idea of playing a finite game for 15 days of game time and then being done. I think it's beautiful. The layout is beautiful. I just want a big, beautiful book of this thing. And I don't know how what I have to do to get that kickstarted or get a publisher to take it on or something. But man, it's just stunning. So please look at As the Sun Forever Sets. It is a really, really stunning Victorian apocalyptic game about Martians attacking.
Shout out to Riley Daniels, the designer of that game. And I'm so glad that you called out something like this, because I have also seen that game. I have not read it cover to cover, but I have taken a look at it, and it does look beautiful, and it is really, really interesting.
Like, yeah, I knew it was doing something special, and I wasn't just shouting at the moon. I brought it up to John Harper, and he was like, yeah, I'm actually asking the designer of that game questions about how they did certain layout things, because they're so good. And yeah, amazing, amazing, amazing. Can't say enough nice things. Go check it out. Go give that designer money, please.
Next up is Lowell Francis. Lowell is the author of the Emmy Award-winning blog Age of Ravens, which I read regularly. He's the community manager for Open Hearth, which is a gaming community that I'm part of. It's a place that I go to when I need to play that cutting-edge indie game that, you know, most people haven't heard about or that my regular group might not be interested in. It's a great place that has people from all around the world, and I'm just really glad to be a part of it. Lowell is somebody who has been playing role-playing games since role-playing games basically existed, and he's got this depth of knowledge, and also he enjoys collecting information and he enjoys compiling it. His History of RPG series on the blog, where he kind of tries to do a chronology of games in specific genres, horror, superheroes, stuff like that. I have without a doubt that in the future, when people write about RPGs, there's going to be this whole host of academic literature that's going to owe a debt of gratitude to Lowell for doing what he does.
So my answer is going to be a little odd, but it's because this game hit me in a really interesting way. In the middle of reading all these cyberpunk games for kind of doing this history of recent games, I picked up a game that I didn't think I was going to like, that I would say looks a little more trad than other games. And when I started reading it, the presentation of information and the way it helps the player and the GM get through things is amazing. Eclipse Phase 2nd Edition. I never thought it was it, because the transhumanist games like never seemed like a thing for me. It is so well written. The way it presents stuff, how it's got things set up, the way it introduces the setting, the way it gives you sample characters and talks about the different, it's really well done. And I'm kind of stunned at how good a job it does in presenting rules material and setting at the same time. I would never have expected that. It's a game I've read, and I'm like, this might not be my cup of tea, but I definitely have to run this in 2023 just because the book is so good.
Next up is Jamal Brown, or Matt J0, as you might know him on the internet. Jay is somebody who I know best as a GM. He ran this fantastic campaign of A Legacy: Life Among the Ruins for me. He has a newsletter. He has a podcast. The newsletter is called Play Fearless. The podcast is called Dysology. You can also catch him on the Actual Play Twitch channel and YouTube channel. He's regularly on there. Honestly, if I had to pick somebody of all my guests who I thought I could put them in front of anybody and they would be able to get that person excited about role-playing games, it would probably be Jay. He just has this boundless enthusiasm. He's just, you know, a great person to have at the table. And I hope we get to play again in the future.
It will be no surprise. It's Legacy: Life Among the Ruins, without a doubt. I certainly am a big Burning Wheel fan. I love Twilight 2000. Champions Down is a lot of fun, but I keep coming back to Legacy: Life Among the Ruins. I'm running a 12-session campaign on the Gauntlet currently, and that's just to get a deeper experience of play with it, right? There are parts I still struggle with, but overall, there's so much joy, so much drama, so much, oh man, I don't, there's so much play experience that I haven't gotten yet. I don't feel like I knew I got my money's worth, but I don't feel like I drank the whole cup yet, right? Also, Ars Magica is a game I have in my head. And if it never gets rebuilt or redone or revisited, I would do it using Legacy Second Edition as the framework underneath. And I talk about that too. But I love it. I love how the families are built and interact. I like the family play level. I like that you can easily drop down and play the characters in that family, and they do different things. You can have a session where it's just one family, representatives from that family, played by other characters, do a session, right? They can do quick characters. They can play members of your family. I think we've done that. Yeah, I like that you've got different modes of play there. They can have their own separate families, but then they can consolidate for a session and play under one family, new characters. Those characters can become NPCs later on. They can be back up and played again as PCs later. And that's fun, right? That's the direction. You could probably play whole games at the family level, right? Or whole games at the character level. As the ages turn, you get to see time move forward. You change the map, which changes the setting. Everyone's adding inputs to that. And then your job as the facilitator is to take all those different things, pattern match them. That's what our brain does, and come up with a new situation that's happening there and let everybody poke and prod and press on that. No, so I love it. And again, it's the Apocalypse World system underneath. I don't know that you get any easier hacking mechanics than that. So this next iteration that I'm running, we're just using the core rule book. We're focusing in on one of the heavier families, the Titans, because if you have the Titans, you get what essentially are kaiju in the game. So we're kind of building the whole game around that one family. There are other families, but the focal point are the Titan family playbook. So I don't see me putting that game down anytime soon. I love running it. I love playing it.
And next up is Indrani Ganguly. Indrani is one of the co-founders of Indian gaming community that I'm part of, called Desis and Dragons. She has a whole list of achievements, which I list out in my introduction to that episode. You should listen to that episode if you haven't. If you want to learn a bit more about the gaming scene in India, I think that's a good place to start. As long as my introduction was for Indrani, I think that's just going to be the first of many things that she's going to achieve. And I'm just so excited to see what else she does and cheer her on. We had a really great session of This Ship Is No Mother, which is my game. I ran it for Indrani and some other folks. And it was one of the standout sessions of the year for me. It was just incredible fun from start to finish, completely new table. So yeah, I just feel hashtag blessed, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. I don't know.
Okay, I am going to very, very highly recommend Alice Is Missing. And I played it for the first time before I got hired by the company that made it, before I knew that was on the cards at all. But it just feels like such a... If you like experiences where you walk away like with like a lot of emotions, and I know that's not for everybody, give it a shot. I will also really highly recommend Blase Monotony. I played it with a friend of mine. It's created by Apri, who's an incredible human being. And the third one, it's called Bubble Bubble. It's like a one-page RPG by Ari, who's also a member of the server, a moderator, just incredible human being. And they made this game where you play witches who are looking to brew a potion. And it is my favorite thing in the world. So those are my current top recommendations.
Next up, we have Tan Shauhan. Shauhan is a designer. He's done a bunch of supplements for games like Pathfinder and stuff like that alongside his own games. Currently, he's working on a game called Dacia, which is a game set in Singapore during the Japanese occupation right around World War II. It combines actual history with some fantastical folkloric elements, and it is one of those games which is designed to appeal to me specifically, in the sense that it is both conceptually and mechanically exactly the kind of thing that I want. And I have to physically stop myself from messaging Shauhan every month and asking him whether the game is ready to be played, because otherwise I'd be doing that. Like I think everyone should be excited for this.
I think actually the thing that got me like kind of like rekindled my love for TTRPGs in the last maybe 7 years or so. It was actually one of like John Stone Metzger's games, The Nightmares Underneath, like, which is pretty much his, hi, what if this was Warhammer? Basically shift the camera away from Europe to basically the caliphate. And what if we basically had a different, there's a bit of a sociological thing about how you cannot actually remove the, in Warhammer, it would be the warp, right? It would be like demons and everything. But here it's kind of like this psychic connection over to a nightmare dimension. And the more bright and shiny society is, the more of this unconscious terrors exist, right? It's all done through this self-contained, standalone, one book. And there's a lot of love and passion in what he puts into his work, right? And for me, in, I think 2016 or 2017, I played one session and I fell really deep into the, hey, let's make OSR stuff, because I got so inspired by that. And that's before I found out, like, yeah, you know, like, that's the OSR space has its own things. Yeah. Like, you know, that's the subject of another podcast, I'm sure. Like, that was the sort of period of time that I was running a lot of 5th edition D&D Adventurer League games. And I was basically going to people like, hey, would you like to try this game? And the rules are free. And I just went around doing these games. And because in Singapore, we have a sizable, I mean, ultimately in Southeast Asia, there's a sizable Muslim population here, right? So suddenly for a lot of my Muslim friends having the chance to play in a fantasy game where essentially Islamic values, in a sense, for example, civilization, order, and community education, and like this, and not this, I guess, a recent style of like hyper-religiosity, right? Was something interesting to be like, hey, you know, we could, there's this cosmopolitan caliphate era period, right, where everybody was looking, and of course in the West we had the Middle Ages, and everyone's looking to the Middle East, and like, oh, you know, these places are also advanced. These places have like, you know, they have air conditioning, they have ice cream, oh my god, Faluda, this is amazing, right? And like, being able to do that was what basically made me feel very happy about TTRPGs for a while. Actually, it got me playing Blades in the Dark of that, because he had Iruvian Blades, I think Johnson Metzger banned a bunch of playbooks, and I was like, hey, I can see sort of like the DNA from TNU into that as well.
Next up, we have Fiona Hopkins and Stephanie Burt, who are co-hosts of the Team Up Moves podcast. Team Up Moves is a relatively new actual play podcast, which focuses purely on superhero games. I think it's really cool. I think you should check it out. I'm a fan of how they do these actual plays, where they play the game with a rotating cast of new guests. And after that, they sit down and they discuss the game in a special episode for that. I think it leads to some great discussion and like critical analysis of these games. Fiona has this more like mechanical system analysis kind of thing. And Stephanie is a poet and a professor of English. So she brings this, first of all, this huge knowledge of like superhero narratives. Like, she studied them. She's a fan of comic books, but yeah, also just this understanding of narrative and story in general. I hadn't spoken to either of them before we did this episode. It was the first time I was talking to both of them. And it was just a fabulous conversation. And it's a great episode. So Fiona is going to go first. And then after that, we'll hear from Stephanie.
So the game that I picked for this is called Wool of Bat. And it's by Ethan Harvey. And you can get it off of his itch page. And it's a belonging outside of belonging, like No Dice, No Masters game that is emulating the, if y'all are familiar with Discworld, Terry Pratchett's Discworld, specifically the witches. So, you know, Nanny Ogg, Granny Weatherwax, McGrath Garlic, etc. This is a game where you play characters who are, you know, the playbooks are patterned after Terry Pratchett's witches. And I played this a couple months ago. It's the first time I'd done a Belonging Outside Belonging game. And we had just a ton of fun. It's got great randomization tables. Just the theme comes through. And so, yeah, check out Wool of Bat, especially if you're a Pratchett Witches fan.
I have played so many fewer, so much less, many less. What's the grammar there? So many fewer games and systems than Fiona that I almost feel like I shouldn't have an answer. But I'm going to say that the game that's been the most fun for me that we have not played on the podcast has been Monster Hearts. Mm. And I would love to, that is a game that does not lend itself to one shots. And it's also a game that feels like, honestly, it feels like a New Mutants comic. But the opportunity to delve into feelings and also get supernatural ridiculousness, and also get the good things about Buffy, because I was a Buffy fan, without the things we now recognize as painfully derivative,
absolutely,
by modern standards, offensive, yeah, or, you know, ruined. The opportunity to do a kind of good things exfiltration from Buffy and then role play that is something I would gladly pursue again. And this is a Powered by the Apocalypse game.
And now we're going to hear from Paul Beakley. Paul is the writer behind the Indie Game Reading Club. He's also a designer of games, but nowadays mostly you'll find him blogging on the site. The Indie Game Reading Club is, again, one of my favorite places to go to for smart and generous criticism of RPGs. Being a critic in the RPG space is really tricky. You know, designers are going to read what you write about them, and it is tough to balance an enthusiastic voice with a critical eye. Like, I think this is not as simple as it sounds. And Paul has been doing this for a long time. I hope people look at the Indie Game Reading Club and learn from what he's doing.
Right now, we are in the middle of a game called A State, which is a Forge in the Dark based game put out by Handiwork Games, which is a Scottish operation. It's the second edition of an old kind of Forge era indie darling that wasn't very good, honestly. It was a very traditional game, just with some very non-traditional subject matter. But it is, in my opinion, currently the best Forge in the Dark game out right now. And it does so many things so well. It will teach you how to use the Forge in the Dark platform better across every other game. Court of Blades, Band of Blades, Blades of the Dark, all of it. Hack the Planet, the whole Girl Underground, probably you'll get a better play out of it if you play A State. I just really believe it does a lot of things very, very well and explains things really, really well. And it also is about a true community building, positive, rather than a zero sum kind of crab bucket like the original Blade of the Dark. Great game, played a ton of it, but it's very much a crab bucket. It's a very like zero sum kind of, I took it from you, you can't have it anymore kind of game. But as far as games I really want to like advocate for that don't get enough positive exposure is Velmini's Fellowship. Fellowship is such a smart game. It's a PBTA based game, and it is broadly, conceptually based on kind of the Lord of the Rings group of adventurers facing off against an implacable evil and eventually destroying it. Another game from the other end of the telescope is like that, is Against the Dark Master, which is a Rolemaster OSR kind of reimagining, right? But Fellowship is so great. It's got a vibe to it that kind of leads a little towards some kind of sci fantasy zaniness. And you can fight against that a bit, which is fine, but it does travel well. It does the fellowship aspect of it really well. You wander around the map. It tricks your group into collaborating on your world setting in a way that my players who have said, I don't want to collaborate, they'll do it. They'll do it because they don't realize they're doing it. And then all of a sudden they're doing it, and then they did the thing. And it's great. It's amazing. It unlocked so much of my players' brains playing this game. Just by virtue of traveling around, the actions that you take, the playbooks, it is really, really interesting. I believe she's doing a fourth edition of it. There's a third edition of it. There's a bundle of holding, I think, came out recently. You can get the whole thing for $20. Oh my God. I paid $100, I think, for all the printed books. Absolutely worth every penny. I think we played 18 sessions, which is insane for a PBTA game. If I get 8 out of a game, it's usually kind of a lot. I'm getting a little bored by then, but it was just onward and upward forever. Loved it. I hope people pay attention to it.
Up next, we have Becky Anison. Becky is one of the co-founders of Black Armada Games. She's the designer of Bite Marks, a game about werewolves, and also Wreck This Deck, which crowdfunded this year. Was theoretically the reason we were hanging out and talking. I had a great campaign of Bite Marks this year, and while playing it, it was really clear to me that it was extremely well designed. Like, it is such a tight PBTA game that is one of the high watermarks of the design movement for me. Like, I don't think people talk about it enough in that context, but it was really a fantastic experience.
Oh, that is such a great question. And I role play a lot. So it's actually been quite hard narrowing it down. But I think the game that I came to was one that I had no expectations going in. And then I played it and I just had the best time of my life. And it was Escape from Tentacle City.
Okay. What's that?
I've never heard this person's name pronounced. So if I get it wrong, I'm going to apologize. But so the game that I'm recommending is Escape from Tentacle City by Willow Palasek. So in this game, you are in a town or a city which has been overrun by the tentacles of this terrible monster. And there are very different locations amongst the city. So firstly, you kind of create a map of where the different locations are. And I always like to start with having like a co-created map. It is a GM-less game as well. And at, I think it's three of the locations that you create a set of characters for each of those locations. So you're playing three different characters throughout the course of the game. And of course, the beautiful thing about that is that when you're playing that many different characters, they are disposable because this is a horror game. So people are going to get eaten by the tentacles. People are going to get eaten by the monsters. And we just had, when we played it, we had the most wonderfully eclectic set of characters. And it was so joyful to be able to play three very different characters who were all responding to world-ending events in very, very different ways, but not knowing which one of them were going to survive. And we worked pretty hard, I think, as a group, that my home group that I played it with, to create probably 12 characters, all of whom were fairly unpleasant. So any one of them, you would have been quite happy to see the back of them for different reasons. And it was just, it was a really well put together GM-less game, but it was one of those games which is not intended to be funny, but in the right hands, it can be brilliantly funny and brilliantly comedic, as you have 12 terrible people interacting with each other absolutely terribly whilst being pursued by tentacles. And they have to kind of move to different areas of the city and some of the town. And sometimes areas of the town get kind of, you know, the tentacles get too big a grip on that piece of the town. Then you can't get to that location anymore and you have to go around by different routes. And eventually the different characters will start bumping into each other. So you get that nice cross-pollination of stories. But I think it's just a really, really brilliant way of telling lots of tiny snapshot microcosm chunks of story and seeing a kind of an apocalyptic scenario panning out from lots of different viewpoints. So you get to do lots of really cool, clever, creative things with a narrative, and that's why I enjoyed it so much.
And now we have Emily Friedman. Emily is an academic best known in RPG circles for her writing about actual play. Like, it's a big focus of her study, and she's one of the most visible scholars of actual play right now. She does really interesting work talking about things like Critical Role and Dimension 20, but also the less well-known, the more experimental side of actual play, the more indie side of actual play. If you're at all interested in that medium, you should be following her and reading her work.
I don't know if this makes me basic or not, but I don't care. I adore The Quiet Year. I teach it in my classes. I ran it most recently for my nephew, who is 8. So a classroom full of 8 and 9-year-olds. Ooh. And I had, you know, you cut the deck so it's shorter. I removed some of the cards that had kind of what I thought were either vocabulary words that I didn't necessarily want to get into, too complex, or concepts that I thought were a little too dark. And then, of course, they're 8 and 9-year-olds. They bring their own darkness to the table, right? You know, homicidal ducks and all kinds of things. It was an amazing experience. And it's such a lovely game to play with that kind of player. Because, you know, 8 and 9-year-olds, everybody wants to talk right now. And The Quiet Year makes you wait. But you have a mechanism for interacting even when it's not your turn, because you can take contempt tokens. And the tiny skulls that come with the print version of this game are just comedy gold. It was hilarious. So yeah, I love that game. I wish there was a comparable physicality to the Deep Forest, which is the kind of flipped post-colonial version. And I keep thinking about what is the visual distinction that would need to be made for the Deep Forest. But yeah, love The Quiet Year.
And now we have Chris Chin. Chris is the blogger behind the seminal deeper in the game block. There is a running pattern here that a lot of my guests this year have been writers about games, or, you know, people who talk about games, people who blog about them or podcast about them. This was completely on purpose. Like, one of the things I was excited to do was to shine a little bit of a light. Actually, that's not true. Like, I don't have the platform with which to shine a light on any of these people. They've been doing work for much longer than I am. Their work is kind of better than the work that I do. So that isn't it. But I think I was excited to talk to them because I think of them as my peers and colleagues, and I want to learn from them. So Chris was exactly that kind of thing. The Deeper in the Game blog has been going on for 15 years, give or take. I think it started around 2007 or something like that. So even longer than 15 years. And Chris has such a wealth of writing on the blog, and it's not transient writing. Like, all of it is as useful now as it was back then. I mean, sometimes that's not a good thing, because sometimes it's like, here are the problems with games now, and why do we have the same problems 15 years later? But, you know, if you want that perspective, Chris is the person to read.
I'm definitely going to say Arendt. Yeah. Arendt has been a lot more fun than we expected. I'm not saying we didn't expect it to be fun, but the players I was playing with mostly did a lot of 5e D&D. And it was sort of like one of those things where, like, I talk a little bit about the idea, they got excited, they started reading the rules, they got progressively more excited, they would come up with a character idea. It, like, every step just made everyone more and more excited and more into the game. It helps that the rules are available for free, so you can just, you know, get the free version of the rules, comes with no art, but you can play the whole game. And then just, like, since then, it's been like I said, right now we're having a three-way faction war, and it's completely, you know, like I'm like, okay, I didn't plan for a three-way faction war, but we've got it. Let's go. So,
and now we have the other co-founder of Black Armada Games, Josh Fox. Black Armada ran two crowdfunding campaigns this year. The second one was for Lovecraft-esque second edition, and Josh was here to talk about that. Josh recently went full-time into running Black Armada, which is really cool, and I wanted to talk to him about the history of this publishing company, in the sense that, what does it take to start an indie game publishing company and, you know, 10 years later go full-time. I wanted to get a sense of what that journey was, what the story of this publishing company was, its ups and downs and stuff like that. And I thought we got to tell that story really well. And it was interesting to discuss, you know, how much of that success is within your control and not, right? Like, that was one of the big things that I was hoping would emerge from the conversation, and I think it did. So yeah, great episode. Maybe our strongest episode, you know, in some way, because of what such a coherent thing that it was trying to do. So yeah, my sincere gratitude to Josh for being such a great discussant and being so transparent about, you know, both the money and also, like, the emotional side of running a business like this.
I'm going to go back to Microscope. I already mentioned it, but I really, and it's quite an old game now, I guess, by indie game standards, but I really heartily recommend Microscope to anyone who hasn't played it. For anyone who doesn't know, the game is essentially it's a world building game, but it's more than that. It's a timeline building game. You basically create a timeline of a potentially quite epic scope. So it's a rare game where you could say, let's chart the entire course, rise and fall of an intergalactic empire, or you could play Game of Thrones with this quite comfortably. That kind of really broad sweep of a setting. And what I particularly love about it is each person on their turn, they're going to create a little chunk of the history, and they can put it anywhere in the timeline they like. So it's like you can zip back and forth through the timeline. You can recontextualize stuff that happened late in the timeline. There's a cool thing you can do where somebody creates a thing and you immediately, on your turn, you blow it up. And then you kind of fill in the gap in between it being created and blown up. And yeah, so I love that. I love that. There is a particular variant. There's a variant called Microscope Union, which I particularly love. And that is a variant where you create a family tree. So you introduce you one by one, you populate the various members of this family tree. And that, I think it adds something substantial to the original microscope formula. So for anyone who does like microscope but hasn't played that, go and try that, because it really, I don't know if anyone has played microscope and thought, gosh, this is really cool, but the characters feel a little bit remote from me because it's such a big epic timeline. Microscope Union fixes that and gives you delightful characters with wonderful backstabby relationships flowing forth this family tree. So I love it. Yeah.
And last but not least, the final guest for 2023 that showed up on the S&D podcast was Evan Turner. Evan is a games academic, a game designer, and a game master. He's somebody that I've been reading for a long time. Evan is somebody who is excited to take games seriously. And because he was around for very directly for this kind of explosion of indie game design, this indie game movement, you know, the Forge, PBDA, all of that stuff, he has both the insider and the sort of like zoomed out academic perspective.
I'm going to recommend the one that I'm running right now, which is Prism by Whitney Delaguio, just a really solid, quirky mermaids relationship game. That's what it is. It's about mermaids having relationships. They have powers. There's some open questions in the scenario, and it's diceless. And so then a lot of the tension comes around framing things in a way that is, quote, I'm more or less nonviolent. Interesting. You're always asking a question like, what does this mean for quote unquote for their relationship, right? Okay. And so then any intrigue plot you introduce is always going to refract back to the players, kind of like film noir, where in genre, right, where any questions you're asking of a mystery are actually ones about yourselves, right? And so that's the kind of campaign I run with Prism. Is much more of a mystery intrigue thing, but you can also do much more of a straight adventure. And I just think the game is underrated, undersold, in part because it is really doing something quite different and extraordinary with fantasy, and kind of pushing the rules to the side so that then you can really get to being mermaids, being cute, being part of this kind of mythic setting, and exploring your relationships.
With all of my guests who have been thinking about games for literally decades, every time I switch off the recording after an hour or an hour and a half or so, I'm like, yeah, that needed to be longer. We should do this again. And I'm hoping that I do get a chance to have part two of these discussions, where I'd love me to get deeper and tackle some of these stuff that we just touch on in these conversations. Yeah, and if you'd like to support me doing that, please head over to patreon.com/indierpg. I would really appreciate it. Well then, that's all for the S&D podcast for 2023. Happy holidays. Have a happy December. And I'll catch you next year.
And cadmium and calcium and chromium and curium. There's sulfur, californium, and fermium, berkelium, and also mendelevium, einsteinium, nobelium, and argon, krypton, neon, radon, xenon, zinc, and rhodium, and chlorine, carbon, cobalt, copper, tungsten, tin, and sodium. These are the only ones of which the news has come to Harvard. And there may be many others, but they haven't been discovered.